Good afternoon. I'd like to bring this meeting of Health Hess Committee to order. It's about 3:03, March 28th, and today we have Representative Sisna, Representative Gardner, Representative Coring, Representative Gatto, myself, Vice Chair Seaton. I'll be conducting the meeting. Representative Wilson is excused for illness today. And we had two things on our agenda. HCR 35 has been canceled from our meeting today, so our item of business will be HB 287, Medical Facility Certificate of Need. And before we begin that, I wanted to announce to everybody that on Wednesday, that's tomorrow at 1:30 in Senate Hess, there'll be a presentation, a special overview update on avian flu by the Department of Health and Social Services, Fish and Game, and Environmental Conservation. And again, that'll be at 1:30 in Senate Hess Committee. Is there anything else to come before us before we start? Just to let you know, we will be having hearing on this bill today, but we won't be moving the bill. Seeing no questions from the committee, we have sponsor. We have someone. Oh, yes. Representative Lynn, would you like to come forward and introduce your bill? Good afternoon.
I'm good to find my glasses here.
I know that feeling.
Yeah.
Right, I might, before we get started, just remind everybody to make sure their cell phones are on mute or off.
Still off from this morning.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, honorable members of the committee. Thank you for hearing HB 287 today.
And Representative, would you go ahead and introduce
yourself? Yes, I beg your pardon. Representative Bob Lynn, District 31, South Anchorage.
Thanks.
And I'm the sponsor of this bill. And again, I'd like to thank you for hearing HB 287 today. I am the prime sponsor of this bill, and Representatives Coghill, Chenault, and Coring are co-sponsors. And as a matter of disclosure, I'm also a prime sponsor of an initiative on certificate of need issues, along with Representative Coring and Mr. Paul Foose. And that initiative has, in fact, been certified. And the principal difference between the bill and the initiative is that the initiative pertains to every place in Alaska, and my bill pertains only to places with a population exceeding 25,000. But I want to focus on the bill because the initiative is not before us, and the bill is. I'd like to ask the committee to please consider this bill from three different but complementary viewpoints. One, protecting traditional American free enterprise. Two, increasing availability of medical care. And three, creating potential cost savings for patients and for workers' compensation costs and even administrative costs to the state. Personally, I think protecting free enterprise is as American as apple pie. If any of us here wanted to go into business together, we shouldn't have to go hat in hand to the government and beg for a certificate of need. It shouldn't matter whether that certificate of need is for a hot dog stand, a pizza parlor, or a medical facility. The free market should decide if a health care facility or any other business is needed, not some self-serving government bureaucracy. A certificate of need, in effect, and for example, gives Anchorage and Fairbanks hospitals a de facto government monopoly. We need more competition, not less. Free enterprise motivates excellence, encourages lower prices through competition, and in the long run benefits consumers. Secondly, people suffering some kind of a health problem need more choices at medical providers, not less. When I get sick, I want to be able to choose my own caregiver and not have the government limit my choices with some certificate of need. For example, when I go shopping for a computer, things usually work out best if I have several different dealers and models that I can choose between. And of course, finding the proper medical provider with the best service, the best care, with whom we have the most trust is infinitely more important than buying some computer. and could in fact even contribute, I think, to one successful recovery. Third, medical costs in Alaska, as we all know, are reaching crisis levels and hurts everybody. Passage of this bill should help lower the escalating cost of workers' compensation and the overall cost of medical care for the state, companies, and families. And typically, as we know, monopolies increase cost and competition lowers cost, and I think that's economics 101. Lastly, there have been some major differences of opinion over fiscal notes. What is legitimate to include in the fiscal note and what is not? And for example, the original fiscal note for the initiative, again, identical, almost identical to my bill, except for no population exemption, that fiscal note came in at an incredible $41 million. But when questioned, we were told that the fiscal note would only be about half of that figure. I saved $20 million one question. I think it's a good thing I asked the question. And as you'll be hearing from witnesses, we think that second figure is also unrealistic and way on the high side. I don't think this bill should be compromised with unsustainable fiscal notes. That's inappropriate and it's not fair. In summary, please evaluate this bill on its merits. Those merits pertain to medical availability, choice of health provider, legitimate cost savings to all concerned, and especially the time-honored principle of American free enterprise. HB 287 is my designated priority legislation for this session, and of course your support of this bill is respectfully requested. And I would ask that you call next upon Mr. Paul Foos for a more in-depth discussion of this bill, and especially the fiscal notes questions which I mentioned, and I'm sure you'll want to hear more about. And again, I thank you for hearing the bill.
Thank you. Representative Dotto.
Mr. Chair, I'll move committee substitute for House Bill 287, version Y, before the committee for consideration.
Thank you. Is there any objection to bringing version Y before us?
Object just briefly. I wanted to find out if the committee substitute is acceptable to the sponsor.
It is.
Okay. Remove my objection.
Okay. Are there any other objections? Seeing none, the committee has version Y before it. Any questions for the sponsor? Representative Coring.
Thank you very much. Comment and not really a question, just a couple of comments. So your presentation was just excellent. I couldn't have said it better myself. You articulated the exact words and feelings that I have, which is frankly the reason why I support this legislation as well. Your comments about free enterprise and competition and all of that are just right on the money, and I think that's going to be the key to our medical crisis that we have as far as the cost and service. If we have competition, of course, you're going to have lower prices ultimately, you're going to have better service to the public. So those are all good things, and I commend you for carrying the bill.
Thank you.
I'm concerned, too, about the fiscal note and the dramatic numbers that we see before us, and it really troubles me to see that. It suggests to me, I don't want to point fingers, but it sort of implies that perhaps the opponents of the bill are trying to kill the bill by virtue of having a greatly inflated fiscal note. Do you share those thoughts?
I don't want to assign motivation to anybody. We have a bill before us which changes the way we do operations here. Change is uncomfortable to some people. I think it would involve a savings to the state. Usually when there's savings to the state, that might mean fewer people working on a particular problem. But I don't want to assign motivation to anybody. I think we're all trying to get to the same place, which is better health care, less cost for all concerned, and certainly I do underline my comments on free enterprise. I think that really American is apple pie.
Mr. Chairman, I want to make sure that
Representative Coring, I do want to make sure that we are asking questions of the sponsor. We can, if we want to debate the bill, yes. We'll have ample opportunity during committee discussion. But Representative Coring, do you have a question?
I don't, but I've got a very brief comment to make. I just want to make sure that it's not misinterpreted that I'm defeating anybody's character. I just think the fiscal note ought to be reevaluated.
Mr. Chairman, I did not mean to imply that, but
Representative Lynn,
we were concerned about the process by which they arrived at the fiscal note. We have several pieces of correspondence, which I believe are in your packages, where we asked questions: how did you arrive at this? How did you arrive at that? Give us some examples, which they did, and then we looked at those and we still had some questions, and the correspondence still ongoing. I think in the course and in the process of the hearing today, we hear some back and forth on these fiscal notes.
Thank you, Representative Gardner, and then Nangado, and then Sisna.
Thank you for this bill, and actually, I really appreciate the chair bringing it up because it's an issue that I understand is being discussed around the nation. And I personally don't know a lot about it. I don't have a position on this bill, but I'm very interested to hear it. My question for you is, can you or maybe your staff or somebody else here just talk a little bit about the history of Certificate of Need, how it arose nationwide, and kind of what's happening in other places? Because I think what we're trying to do here isn't unique by any means.
I can't give you the complete history. I think people audience might be able to give you better history, but it's interesting to me that I just, as everybody knows, I've got a blog, and I checked it this afternoon, and I spoke on this very subject on House Bill 511 back in April of 2004, and that's what sparked my interest. So for me, the history begins in April 2004, and several states are looking at this bill with an eye toward changing it. The exact genealogy of this certificate of need, I'm not prepared to answer. I think other people are.
Okay.
And Representative Gardner, we have a long list of people to testify, and maybe some of those people will have familiarity with that and can address that issue.
Okay. And
Representative Gardner, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do. In a brief follow-up, is it your understanding that it was a national mandate some years ago that the states followed, and then the national mandate was removed, but the Certificate of Need remained in place in many parts of the country?
Through the chair, I think that's basically it.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Sisna.
Mr. Chair, I would like to express a concern. I have heard with this specific bill some comments both before this meeting and right at the beginning of this meeting that make me feel as if there's a kind of a tendency perhaps to use language that may sound as if you're for this bill, you're a good person, and if you're against it, you're not. And we have lots of ideas that come before this committee. I would hope that that we let the product rise or fall on its own wisdom.
Okay, and I just want to make sure that everyone understands that we have a bill before us, and the bill is a consideration, I think we've already talked about people not impugning other people's motives or any considerations there. So if there are questions for the sponsor, we want to get to the questions, but we are under consideration of this bill, and we've got a lot of testimony to go. So, Representative Gatto.
Thanks. Just looking through it, the bill doesn't eliminate CON, it simply amends it. And I was looking at the original F version compared to the A version, the new Y version, wondering if there was a significant difference, and that's in my searches, I couldn't find
it. I think Nancy Manley, my chief of staff, might be prepared to answer that.
Yeah, I'm Nancy Manley, staffer, Representative Lynn, and what we did on the CS with the intent on that was to keep the resident nursing homes and residential psychiatric treatment centers as part of the Certificate of Need program. There was a lot of concern about that, and so and I think that was actually our intent originally, or that was part of the initiative. That is part of the initiative, and we've made it part of our legislation.
Okay, I'll continue. The new
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The new Section 4 simply addresses nursing home, and the old Section 4 became Section 5. Is that essentially the change between the versions?
The version, or through the chair, what we've changed on here, page 2, let's see, page 1, we've changed the title to add residential psychiatric treatment centers. Nursing home was already there. Line 7, we added G. Page 2, lines 4, we added G. After the word in, we added G. Line 6, we added facility under statute AS 4732. And then lines 13 through lines 25 was all added. And that's talking about the nursing homes and psychiatric treatment centers. And then lines, page 2, line 29, we added "and psychiatric treatment centers." And then page 3, line 1, "except for nursing home and psychiatric treatment centers." So it was just the intent to exclude those from opening up the con. Everything else would be opened up for any community that had a greater number of 25,000 population.
And I would just like to note that we do have the fiscal note. You'll notice in the analysis that it is addressing the committee substitute for 287. That's the fiscal note of 316. So just for everybody's knowledge that this fiscal note does it address the CS. Are there any other questions for the sponsor? Yes, Representative Gardner.
Thank you. If we accept that providing health care is, in many respects, a business and that we need to allow marketplace rules to apply here and that competition will bring down prices, why would we want to exempt nursing homes and residential psychiatric centers from the provisions of this bill?
To the
Representative
chair.
Lynn?
I'm pretty much of a diehard capitalist mentality. As we know, things are the art of the possible down here, and I think it's better to move with what is possible, frankly, to get through the committee, frankly, to get through the House and the Senate, and try to do everything. And I think this is a step in the right direction. I think that the principle is the same. It's a more narrow focus of the principle of free enterprise and capitalism.
And we've been joined by Representative Coghill, and he had a
just a portion response of that question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Coghill.
Thank you. The residential psychiatric treatment issue is almost all public pay, so most of the patients are going to be either Medicaid or some other public pay method. So I think that's probably why. It's not bad to let the government be in charge of how many beds they'll make available. I think that's probably the primary issue. Same thing with some of the nursing home issues. Most of it is either through our waiver system, federal, Medicaid, Medicare mix.
Representative Gardner, follow
up. Thank you. I've asked that question of many people, and you're the first one that gave me an answer that made sense.
Representative Sista. Well,
thank you. Kind of a follow-up to that question, Representative Lynn. You are saying essentially that hospitals are in the private sector and that should be competition, right?
I believe in competition through
right.
the chair.
And I come from the private sector, and I believe in
competition.
Follow up, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so my question would be, I'm trying to think of other, if my business that I had for 28 years didn't have anybody telling me I had to see people 24 hours a day and that I had to see them, whether I wanted them or not. And it was really key because I had my business in my home that I didn't see some people. So how does that figure that they're really, that the same rules apply?
I'm not sure, through the chair, that I follow that.
Representative Sisna, I'm just trying to find out. Did that apply to this bill, or is it?
Yeah, well, because we're talking about hospitals here, and we're saying that we need competition among hospitals. Does that mean every single person who gives those services is also required to 24 hours be available and to take anyone and everyone that comes to the door?
Through the chair,
that's what hospitals.
It would be. It would depend on the facility. If you wanted to compete in the marketplace, effectively, you need to offer similar services to other facilities. If you chose only to work 1 hour a day or 5 hours a day, things would happen accordingly. Everybody who opens a business decides how long to keep their business open, mm-hmm. how to conduct the business. That's all we're asking here.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Coghill is a co-sponsor of the bill, and he would like to address that question as well.
Good question.
And I really came here just to listen to the testimony, so...
Oh, yeah.
But part of the answer to that is, it is true that we have mandated that in ERs, all people must be taken. So because of that, hospitals get an extra bump on the Medicaid rate for their work as a hospital. So there's a little bit of already taken care of for that mandate. It may not cover all the needs, I grant you, but I'll have to go back and research the percentage, but I think it was 25 or 22 or somewhere in that neighborhood. And then there are other ways that they can use Medicaid money to a greater advantage than most other businesses. So there is advantages. Now, not all hospitals fit the same business model, so there are private and nonprofit, as well as publicly owned hospitals. So in Alaska, most of them are nonprofit, except for one, I think.
And I would just note that this bill deals with expenditures over $1 million.
May I ask one?
Representative Cisna.
One more follow-up, thank you, Mr. Chair. And since, in fact, you have thought this through, do you have supporting documents in terms of the cost effectiveness of the of that federal funding and whether or not it actually does cover the expenses so that they're at an even playing field?
I have document.
Representative Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry, I forget the protocol here. Just jump right in. I don't have it with me. I can get on the Medicaid rate issues. The cost effectiveness of it is debatable. I mean that's going to be a debate for a long time.
And we will develop information through the public testimony, I'm sure. Are there any other questions for the bill sponsors about this bill? Representative Corey.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lynn, regarding support of this legislation in the medical industry, isn't it not true that there's a large number of physicians throughout the state that support this concept of eliminating the certificate of need, or at least reducing it, and is that not a growing trend as well?
Representative Coyne, through the chair, yes, that's true. This is getting a snowball effect, and more people are coming on board with both the concept and the practicality of it, because we all face the same challenges, which include the rising cost of medical care. This was the big issue in workers' compensation, big issue in PERS and all these other things we deal with over and over and over again. Medical costs are causing many, many problems in this state. We think the certificate of need is one manner in which we might address some of these challenges. Mm-hmm. And yes, people begin to understand. Most people don't know anything about certificate of need. I knew nothing about it, quite frankly, until this HB 511 came up in April of 2004, and I said, what is this? You know, what's going on here? And I had some sharp words about it, pretty similar to what I said today.
Thank you, Representative. And one additional, if I may, Mr.
Representative Corrin.
Okay. What's happening in the other states? Are we seeing, speaking of trends, are we seeing certificate of needs being, requirements being dropped in other states too? And if so, is that having a positive effect on the medical industry?
Through the chair, what did you tell me, 35 or 34 states?
There's 36 states that still
have it. But
we're having a dialogue here, and it's going to be really hard for the secretary. So please identify yourself and address the question.
Okay, Nancy Manley with Representative Lynn's office. And actually, we have some people here in the audience that can testify and give you real good, accurate information on that. We were just talking to them about that just before we came down here, and there's like 36 states currently that still have it, but there's a lot of movement to remove the certificate of need programs in these states, and some have already been done, and so on.
Thank you. I'm sorry if I re-asked a question that was similar to Representative Gardner's earlier.
Thank you, and I just want to remind the committee what we need to do here is get clarification on the bill, and then we'll get public testimony. After we get public testimony, then we'll have a committee discussion, and we can bring out all those points that we wish.
There are several experts in the audience who really know the ins and outs of all the nuts and bolts of it, and I prefer to have them come up because this is their job.
Thank you, Representative Lynn. Seeing no other questions from the committee, thank you very much for presenting the bill. And now we will go to public testimony.
Thank you.
And we'll start in Fairbanks with Jim Lynch. Are you online?
Yes, sir, I am.
Would you please identify yourself and your affiliation and go ahead with your testimony?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for having us today. My name is Jim Lynch, Fairbanks resident since 1969. I'm currently Director of Human Resources for Fairbanks Memorial Hospital and formerly a certified public accountant here in Fairbanks. I, too, believe with Representative Lynn in believing capitalism and unrestricted competition as positive and strong economic theories, but I do not believe that these theories work perfectly and should not be applied blindly in every situation. I am strongly opposed to HB 287 for several reasons. First is the cost, which I think will get thoroughly discussed here today on both sides of the issue. I think it is a flawed assumption to believe that due to competition in a healthcare industry where the economics are not normal, there is heavy government subsidy and regulation, and in remote, by remote I guess I mean geographically isolated communities like we have in many areas of Alaska, I think those economic conditions are amplified. And you may find in many situations that your costs in a community actually increase. Wages are likely to increase due to competition for technically trained staff that are in short supply in the state of Alaska, thus inflating the cost structure for both a hospital and a standalone surgery center. Likely a community hospital like our own may have to compensate for lost surgical revenue by raising prices for other services we provide, thereby resulting in potentially higher overall health care costs for the community. And it has already been mentioned by someone that the hospital sees all patients regardless of their ability to pay, and a surgery center will likely only see patients with the ability to pay, and they'll likely perform cases that are most efficient and have the maximum reimbursement from government or private insurers. So that's the cost issue. Second issue that I'm challenged with is the issue of self-referral. If you really look into the competitive framework for the provision of medical care in any community, historically you have hospitals and potentially standalone surgery centers as facilities that sell surgical services. Physicians then sell the physician services related to delivery of health care. The economic relationship between the two groups is complementary, with the hospitals and centers providing the facility services that the doctors need and with the physicians providing the patient referral volume that the facilities need economically. But this whole relationship shifts when the referring physicians acquire personal financial ownership in the freestanding healthcare facility that competes with the hospital facility. This is a particularly troublesome issue. It is not new within the United States healthcare model, because our model has very solid foundations in being driven by the physician order of whatever exam or procedure is to take place. This is very important in our quality of care model. However, when the physician investor has the option to refer his or her patients at his or her discretion to either the hospital facility that he does not own or to the standalone surgery center that he or she may own, in my example, does own or invest in. I find that conflict troubling in the quality of care model for the community. Lastly and briefly is I'm deeply troubled by the small size of the community that Representative Lynn's legislation has proposed. In going down to a $25,000 population community size for this to eliminate the certificate need applicability. I think if we look nationally and we study these other states that have and do not have the certificate need, we will find that it takes a minimum, in my opinion, of about 300,000 people, although I do not have the personally have the data to support that, but a minimum of 300,000 to have an open economic model that can sustain the competition we're talking about. Thank you for your time today.
Okay, thank you very much. Does anyone have any question for Mr. Lynch? Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Lynch. Just to make sure I understand exactly, and we're sort of dancing around this, but are you basically saying that if a physician has an ownership in a standalone facility, say a surgical facility, and that physician makes a referral either to his or her own facility or the hospital, that there's a conflict of interest that could influence that decision?
Yes, and the issue is the potential increased gain by referring to a facility in which I have an investment. So, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Lynch? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Lynch. Let's stay in Fairbanks with Rob Gould. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Can you also identify yourself and who you're affiliated with for the record, and go ahead with your testimony?
Yes, I'm Robert Gould. I've been a resident in the state of Alaska since 1972. I'm affiliated with Fairbanks Memorial Hospital as a finance officer and operations. So I have responsibility for imaging and radiology and other outpatient services. I'd like to start my testimony today by thanking you for the opportunity to testify against House Bill 287. Over the last 4 or 5 years, I've testified a number of times about the impact that elimination or weakening of the certificate of need would have on a community hospital, and in particular, the impacts in Fairbanks. There are four areas in healthcare that continue to make money for facilities. The only areas, if I was doing this as a business model, the only areas as a hospital that we should provide from a competitive and profitable position would be surgery, radiology, pharmacy, and lab. As everyone knows, those are not the extents to which of the services to which the hospitals in these communities provide. It's a much broader service, but those are what pay for all the rest of the services, because the other services, the reimbursement system is such that they cannot make money. The assertions of this bill is that by elimination of the certificate of needs in communities over 25,000, you'll increase competition and will decrease costs. Again, I've testified a number of times that do not believe this is true. Since this debate has raged on for a number of years, we are now seeing some actual data that supports the hospital's position over time that, in fact, it will increase the cost of care, because competition, it is not an easily identified area in healthcare. The free market is very different because of the governmental regulations and the what Jim Lynch just discussed on the self-referral issues. In Fairbanks right now, as of February 22nd, I did a survey of the two top MRIs that are done in Fairbanks. And over time now, there's been a number of physician-owned MRIs that have come into Fairbanks in competition with Fairbanks Memorial. Again, I would point out that over the years, each of these entities has testified that if they were allowed into the market, they would decrease cost. So for an MRI spine, without contrast, at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, the cost would be $1,490. That includes the radiologist's reading fee. At one of the local entities in Fairbanks that has an MRI, the cost is $1,745. At the most recent entry, the cost at that entity is $1,975. So at one entity, it's 17% higher than Fairbanks Memorial. The other is 32% higher. Again, this is the number one procedure in Fairbanks, Alaska. The second would be MRI of the brain without contrast. At FMH, it is $1,654. At one of the other entities, it is $1,716. At the newest entity, it is $2,120. So again, that's 3.7% higher than Fairbanks Memorial and 28% higher than Fairbanks Memorial. Also, because we have a large insured base, we're able to see charges at other communities. For knee arthroscopy, which would be the number one surgery done in most surgery centers, at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, it's $3,191 for an all-inclusive rate for the technical component, not the physician component. That same technical component at the surgery center in Anchorage is $4,800, 50% higher than Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. So over time, each of these entities that have come in and testified before you that this would increase competition, and if they were allowed into the market, that they would decrease the cost, we now are actually seeing exactly what happens. Because of the referral pattern, and because that it is not a pure free market, we're seeing that patients are being driven to facilities that have higher costs because they don't understand the costs, they don't understand the exams, and they're going where they're referred by their physician. To wrap up my testimony, I believe that the data would show, and if you are continuing to study this on a statewide level, you should ask some of the facilities to look at their charges, because you'll find that in the not-for-profit community hospitals, the charges are more than likely much lower than those in the for-profit, privately owned facilities. I believe that if you were to pass this bill, or if you were to weaken the CON, you will drastically harm hospitals in Alaska and the communities in Alaska, and instead of decreasing costs, you will actually increase the cost of care in Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Gold. Does anyone have questions? Representative Gardner.
Thank you. You testified that there are four procedures that are the big money makers for the hospitals, and the other procedures they can't make money on, but they're able to do those because of the four big procedures. Is that an accurate assessment? Did I understand correctly?
That is correct. So surgery, the way the reimbursement system works right now, is that facilities are paid the most for surgery, radiology, pharmacy, and lab. They're paid well beyond what the cost of the services are, and then they're paid much lower on others, which is why you see people wanting to eliminate the CON. You're not going to see somebody come in and put in an inpatient mental health unit. You're not going to see anybody put in an emergency room. You're not going to see anybody do home health care or chronic inebriates or diabetes. You're going to see them go after surgery, radiology, pharmacy, and lab.
Representative Gardner, follow up.
Thank you. This kind of gets to the heart of what I understand about certificate of need. If you provided only those four kinds of treatments, would you be able then to reduce your rates for those four?
In theory, you should be able to, yes. And again, when you look at these, for example, the services that I just discussed, the others ought to be able to, and I will never argue that they could not do it at a lower cost to themselves, but their charges will be much higher because there's a profit motive. So the cost at these other entities, because they don't have to be open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, like a hospital does, they'll start at 8 in the morning. They'll go home at 5 at night. There'll be no overtime. There'll be no shift differential. There'll be no additional staffing. And as such, their cost should be much lower. But in fact, again, because of the ability to steer patients, they can charge essentially whatever they want.
Okay. Thank you. And a follow-up, Representative Gardner.
Follow-up. Then if I'm a self-pay patient right now in Fairbanks and I go and choose to have my radiology procedure done at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, in effect, I'm subsidizing your obstetrics ward or something because I'm paying a higher cost than you would otherwise have to charge me because the price that I'm billed for the services I'm having there are set at a level that allows you to subsidize other procedures. Is that accurate?
I would say that is an accurate statement, but I would clarify it by saying that, again, Medicare and Medicaid set rates. They tell us what we can and cannot charge. And the way that everything is done, whether it's insurance, private pay, et cetera, really revolves around how Medicare and Medicaid pay or what their regulations are. Blue Cross follows many of the regulations that Medicare and Medicaid do. But Medicare and Medicaid pay very well in those four areas and pay extremely poor in all the rest of the areas. So, in effect, we're doing exactly what the government has asked us to do, which is charge more because you're going to get paid more in these areas.
Okay. And Representative Gardner, do you have a follow-up? But before
yes.
you do, let me recognize that we've been joined by Representative Anderson and also Mr. Lynch and Mr. Gould and everyone else online. If you have written testimony, it would really help the committee if you could fax that down to us, or if you're at the LIO can send it down to us. You know, we've been sitting here writing comparative numbers and all, but it would be much nicer if you have them in a chart form. So, Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I actually have a different question. It's not a follow-up.
Okay. Just a minute. Is there anyone else that has a question for Mr. Gould this time? Go ahead, Representative Gardner.
Okay, thank you. You indicated that the data shows that removing certificate of need will increase costs. Do you actually have data that you can share with us about that?
I do have the data. It's not in a format that I'd be prepared to fax at this point because it has the names of the entities, and I'd like to remove them. You all can figure out who they are, who the competitors are in the community easy enough, but we don't typically put the competitor's name on our sheet that we submit.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And we would appreciate that after you've been able to scrub the, you know, confidential data. That
sure, absolutely.
So, but it would be helpful to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also, if there's anybody else listening who has data, whether it's from Alaska or elsewhere, I'd be very interested in seeing it.
And we could also supply, this is the same issue that's going on across the nation with specialty hospitals. They're having the same debate as they're saying they've stopped. As you know, there's a moratorium on specialty hospitals across the nation because all of the studies at this point show that those specialty hospitals have increased cost and that these hospitals that are owned by physicians are seeing a decrease in government patients in those hospitals, which causes an increase of government patients in community hospitals, and that they're really seeing the more profitable commercial insurance payers in those specialty hospitals. So the federal government right now has a moratorium on all specialty hospitals, which I would say is really the same issue that we have here with the CON. We're just in a smaller market and a smaller game.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony today. And as the committee and the audience can tell, we are taking extensive testimony from people because this is a very detailed issue that needs some clarification and numbers and issues that are very important. So I'm not restricting people in their testimony, but if you are going to address a point that has already been addressed, if you could just reference the other person and then just give a brief statement on that particular issue, that would be helpful, and then go on covering other issues that are particular to your facility. So let's now go to Matt Sue. Norman Stevens, are you online?
Yes, sir, I am. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you identify who you're representing and go ahead with your testimony?
Yes, I'm Norman Stevens. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for the new Mat-Su Regional Medical Center here in Palmer, Wasilla, and I appreciate the opportunity to be heard. Representative Linden referred to the situation as Economics 101, and I would respectfully maintain that's not Healthcare Economics 101. In fact, I've taken a master's degree in healthcare administration and studied healthcare financing, and in fact, healthcare financing is quite a bit different than traditional financing. In hospitals, we're really dealing with a people-oriented business. Our product is to hire people to take care of other people in a very intensive format. The people come with a very high cost. It's different than manufacturing a product such as a VCR or a widget of whatever, you know, in a traditional economic model, the more things that you can manufacture using mass production techniques or the ability to outsource labor to foreign markets, whatever, it drives the cost down. And in fact, competition in that regard does reduce costs. But in hospitals, we're really dealing with a type of economics that's inherently cost-based. And people talk about how much do you charge for something in the hospital, and it's always difficult to educate them on the fact that what you charge doesn't make that much difference, because it's really what your cost structure is in a hospital that determines whether or not you're effective and whether or not you're able to sustain the hospital at the end of the month. If you think about it, another analogy was being, you know, it's an American as apple pie, the economics 101, and I would use that pie to illustrate the point I'm trying to make, and that is there's a finite amount of people in a community that need a finite amount of health care. And if it takes a hospital to take care of the health care needs of that group, or that pie, if you will, adding a second hospital or adding a second imaging center or a surgery center, as the folks up in Fairbanks pointed out, doesn't reduce the cost to that community. In fact, it replicates that program. It doubles the cost in some respects. The other thing that happens is we're also dealing with a tremendous staff shortages, very finite resources of staff, hard to come by. And when you start to get into a situation where people come in and they start these programs, especially the programs that are niche markets that tend to sort of be cream skimmers, if you will, they are attractive to employees because they can operate 8 to 5. They don't have to put you on the night shift or the weekend shift. So they tend to compete fiercely for the hospital's employees. The hospitals, in turn, have to then jack up the salaries to compete with these groups. And really, it creates a vicious cycle that really threatens the stability of the community hospital. And that's why I would really, you know, respectfully request that you look at this again. And I really would oppose House Bill 287, because it is truly, the House Bill 287 is based on flawed logic and flawed economic theory that hasn't been examined thoroughly. And I would hope that you would look at this. I think that's pretty much what I have to say. I know I was a CEO in a hospital in Texas, and I lived through this in Corpus Christi, Texas, where the CON law was eliminated, and it was during a period of has been described in the literature as the medical arms race in our country, where for-profit companies, everybody was coming in trying to leapfrog each other with increasing technology. A hospital would go in, and they'd build a hospital across the street or up the road. And in Corpus Christi, Texas, there were a number of hospitals that went out of business and were boarded up or sold. And I don't think that the small state like Alaska, with the limited resources that we have and the small population base, I really don't think that we could tolerate it as well. I think we're a lot more vulnerable. You talked about some of those states. There are 14 states that don't have certificate of need laws. I would maintain those are large, huge states with enormous populations that have different economic forces at play. So, again, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, and I'd be glad to take any questions I might be able to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. We had testimony a little bit ago about the size of an area that would support without certificate of need or with the competitive model. Do you have any population ideas? I know you're talking about large states and all. Do you have any size of community that you think is necessary for the competitive model to work?
I know that when I was in Corpus Christi, that city, that area was about 379,000, and and again, it may have been a different time and a different area in which there was a lot more escalation of healthcare services and a lot more publicly traded companies building hospitals. But my guess, and I think the guys in Fairbanks said something along 300,000, and that's my understanding too, is that, you know, once you start getting over 300,000 people in a community, any one player becomes less vulnerable in that case. In the situation of the MATSU, I would point out that the original Valley Hospital Association, which is a not-for-profit entity that's taken care of the health care needs of this valley for 70 years, has really, they've staked everything they had on this project, and we've put $101 million into the ground here to build a hospital for this community. And there's a lot at risk in this community. And we've got, obviously, there's a lot of people interested in the growth in the MATSU. There are niche providers hovering around us at all the time, you know, and they are doing exactly what the gentleman in Fairbanks said, and they're trying to pick off the profitable product lines and the programs that the hospital depends on to make our living. And then the only option that we have, if another radiology group goes in next door to me, the only thing I have, the only choice I have, is to try to spread that cost out over other things. I would have to compete for radiology services. I'd be forced to drop the prices in radiology so I could compete for that service line. And the only way I could keep the hospital breaking even or on margin would be to then look at other areas in the hospital that are not being provided and try to recover the cost there. Again, it's a difficult situation, chasing your tail, trying to keep the thing above water. And I really do. I know that the Healthcare Advisory Board is a national think tank group. It's a not-for-profit foundation organization that hires over 800 MD, PhD combination people. They just put on a presentation in multiple locations across the country about, and the name of the presentation was Overcoming Ruinous Competition, and it talked about community hospitals, case studies across the country where hospitals were, in their words, being ruined literally by this phenomena of people who are essentially profit seekers trying to just focus again on the lucrative niche markets that are in the healthcare field, and it's devastating community hospitals around the country.
Thank you. So. Thank you, Mr. Stevens. If you have that presentation, if it's on the web or something, if you could forward to the committee the address, we'd appreciate it. We have a question from Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Stevens, really happy that you talked about your education, because one of the things that I have been really wondering, I took Economics 101, actually it was 201, but, you know, some
lean back a
little bit. I don't know how the, it's still feedbacking and I'm off. But anyway, what went right along with, in the list of things that we were talking about, all of the different principles of economics, was externalities. And the fact that, as I understand it, your degree included economics and healthcare, that's one of the things that we don't have lots of in this state, are people with those two things in their background. We don't have any health economists that I know of. And that's going somewhere.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Now, how come is it that when... Yeah, never mind. Okay. So now my question is, what part of what you're talking about fits into externalities? And how does... Because I believe you know what I'm talking about. And could you explain what externalities mean in your business and what you do?
I apologize. If you could define externality for me, I'm not familiar with that term, so no. I may not have taken the same course.
Okay, it was actually 201, and it was mentioned in 202, and we talked about it a lot in my
Fisna.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Other people have spoken for time, and I'm saying that it was also in my graduate economics course. But externalities is what happens when market systems don't work perfectly, and it's the kind of the waste product that happens in market systems.
Representative Sisna, We'll get under this under committee discussion.
Except that we don't have anybody in the committee that I thought had a background in both economics.
Well, apparently Mr. Steffens is not.
Well, we haven't given him a chance to really. I explained
to
it.
To address that issue, so.
Mr. Chair.
No.
That's not, a question.
No. Representative Gatto, did you have a question?
Just a question, Mr. Stevens. We have talked about this issue at some length. I did want to make some point. You are a for-profit hospital. Alaska Regional is a for-profit hospital, and I believe Fairbanks Memorial is also, as opposed to Providence and Bartlett, which are community government hospitals. Does that change your outlook as far as, since you're a taxpayer and you're some of your competitors, although I don't know that your competitors, if they get far enough away, does it change your outlook on certificate of need with respect to profit versus nonprofit hospitals?
No, sir, Mr. Gatto, I don't think it does. There's clearly, you know, the difference in ownership, how that has to do with what happens to your reserves over revenue, but what really, in a profit hospital, for-profit hospital, we provide the same amount of uncompensated care and we provide charity care. In fact, if you look at the relationship that we've got with this community, one of the clear concerns that the Valley Hospital Association had would be in selecting a company to build a hospital here, would the needs of the uncompensated be taken care of? And our charity care in this hospital, which is over 2.5% of gross right now, has actually increased since our company has taken over the hospital. So it hasn't decreased, and that's on a per unit basis. So we're dealing with the same rules and regulations that pertain to a for-profit hospital. The market pressures are the same. We have the same laws that require us to not ask people whether they have the means to pay. And in fact, in some respects, it's even more, because of being a for-profit hospital, it's even more politically sensitive. In a community where we're trying to maintain a good reputation and ensure that we get, you know, business from our community, we've got to be very careful about our approach toward being a for-profit, and it doesn't change that at all.
Okay, thank you. Representative Gatto, do you have a follow-up?
I do, Mr. Stevens.
Question.
Yeah. I do. Once again, we had talked a lot about leveling the playing field, which was a term I think we both tried to discuss. Does this bill level the playing field or do the reverse?
I think the bill does the reverse. What it does is that it simply allows other niche providers who don't have the same obligation to the community to come in and operate freely, and it doesn't remove those constraints, either legally or morally. I mean, we're a hospital, so it doesn't matter if the rules suddenly changed and we didn't have to operate an emergency room all night long. How could we maintain ourselves as a hospital if we didn't? You know, it goes right to the nature of what we are and what we do. And we, to put us in the same situation competing against these 8-to-5 niche operators, it's definitely not a leveling of the playing field.
Okay, thank you. Representative Gardner?
Thank you, and thank you for your testimony, Mr. Stevens. You described what happened in Corpus Christi when the certificate of need requirement was removed and that there was an influx of other businesses, and currently there are boarded-up hospitals in Corpus Christi. Do you know how the health care costs today in Corpus Christi compare to costs in other communities of comparable size and perhaps with or without certificate of need in place?
I'm not sure that I could give you specific information. I would have to, without doing some research, obviously. To answer that question just off the cuff like this, I would say the costs are predicated. Again, remember, there's a 75% labor cost associated with operating a hospital. So, again, I would say the more operations that you have, certainly in a community, the more demand you have for labor and the more the labor goes up. So my guess would be that, in fact, as it has everywhere, costs continue to go up. I don't know that there's a community that you could cite where costs have actually gone down in healthcare. It's a national emergency that the costs are rising in healthcare, but I would also tell you that costs in healthcare are costs that healthcare sustains. We incur those costs in trying to operate it, and those costs are largely labor, again, technology costs as well, to maintain currency. The other thing that we have in this community, in this country, is a need to control costs. At the same time, we have to watch out for making sure that we don't make mistakes, so that drives brand new technology and the overutilization or the excessive utilization of technology. Therefore, that drives up costs. So it's kind of a catch-22.
Okay, and Representative Gardner, follow up.
Thank you. I think it's generally understood that when new businesses come to town, there's sort of a shakeup, and some survive and some don't, and we accept that as part of our economic system. But if there's anybody who has any hard data about what actually happens to healthcare costs in a community, that after the dust settles, when a community has removed certificate of need after having had one, or communities, if they can compare, because I'm, you know, there's a lot of sort of anecdotal stuff here, but we're not.
And Representative Gardner, I believe we have at least one person calling in with, that has data on.
Thank you.
Around the country on that specific issue. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony, and we will go to Kodiak. Don Roberts, are you online or at the LIO?
Hi.
Would you identify who you're representing and go ahead with your testimony? Did we lose Mr. Roberts? Mr. Roberts, I believe maybe you're on mute. Would you try again? Oh, we're disconnected. Okay, Mr. Roberts, we'll, if you're hearing us, we'll come back to you. We'll go to OffNets, Dr. Stephen Stutley. Are you there? Would you go ahead and identify yourself and who you represent and proceed with your testimony, please?
We're going to get Dr. Stutley in just a moment. Dr. Stutley is with the patient right now.
Okay.
If
he's going to be a few minutes, we can go to someone else and then come back.
Okay, thank you.
Deborah Kiley, are you there? Advanced Medical Centers, Deborah Kiley, are you online?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hello, we can hear you. Would you go ahead and identify yourself and who you represent for the record, and then go ahead with your testimony, please.
Thank you. My name is Debbie Kiley. I'm a resident of College Village in Anchorage and a nurse practitioner. I do provide care for patients at Advanced Medical Centers of Alaska in Anchorage, but I am speaking for myself as a nurse. I've been a nurse for over 30 years and a nurse practitioner for over 20, and I've seen quite a number of things change in that period of time. I appreciate the amount of testimony you've heard, and I'm going to be brief. When the certificate of need process was introduced in 1972, it was designed to control costs by stopping the proliferation of all types of medical facilities, by requiring review for projects costing over $100,000. It did not fill its promise, and restricting building did not control the cost of health care. The CON concept has no more application to life in 2006 than a $100,000 medical facility budget will buy today. The federal government and 20 states have revoked the CON requirements, and I'm asking you to take the first step in making Alaska the 21st state to do this. To achieve access to quality, cost-effective care, we need a variety of perspectives and competition. There's a myth that's been reinforced today that only hospitals and community health centers provide for the underserved. This is simply not true. In the private sector, you will see physicians, physical therapists, nurse practitioners, and all types of other clinicians donate untold hours and resources to patients with no or inadequate financial resources. It's not well publicized and not reimbursed, but I assure you, it happens every day. In fact, you would probably be shocked if the totals of freely given services were actually totaled. It's not accurate to portray all the hospitals as altruistic and all the private sector providers as motivated solely by greed. Rather than placing artificial barriers in front of private citizens who have the vision to build and create, the state would be better served by allowing a level playing field and fostering competition by eliminating the subsidy of existing facilities that occurs when you do not allow new construction. With competition, providers can attract patients by improving their quality of care, improving service to the patient, and/or decreasing cost to payers. Patients deserve a choice of where they want to receive their services, and they are becoming more and more savvy in evaluating quality of care and cost, and deserve the opportunity to vote with their feet. Anyone who's met with a patient in the past year has had them tell you what they can find on the internet regarding what treatment options are available and what something costs. I urge you to support HB 287, and I thank you for the time and efforts you've put forth to improve the health of Alaskans. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kiley. Does anyone, Representative Sisna has a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Or, no, Mr. Chair, excuse me.
That was Representative Anderson for
giving
the record.
Giving promotions to, you know, people right and left.
Representative
Sisna. Yes, and my question is, do you know if some examples of why the CON, the Certificate of Need, would be the reason why the price is increased? Because it sounded as if without the CON that it would bring down the costs of care. Is that what you meant?
If I misspoke, I'm a little nervous talking to all of you.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
My goal was to say that costs would go down if there were more facilities available, and they would not go up, which is what previous testifiers have said. I think that it's faulty logic, and there have been lots of studies talking about how building more facilities will drive up the cost of care, and a lot of that is attributed to providers who will over-order tests and et cetera. And I don't think that's looking at the whole picture. I'm not here with data. I figured you'd have plenty of people giving you numbers.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we? Okay, now we'll go to Dr. Sutley, are you online yet? If you're not, that's fine. We'll go.
Yes. Did you call for Dr. Sutley?
Yes, we did.
Okay, yes, I'm here.
I appreciate that. Would you identify yourself and who you're representing for the record and go ahead with your testimony?
Sure. Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Dr. Stephen Sutley. I represent the Alaska Oral and Maxillofacial Surgery Center in Fairbanks, Alaska. I've been a resident here for 11 and a half years and in private practice. I'll just make this brief. A lot of people have already addressed some of the things that I think are important, but I'll be glad to answer any questions you might have. But as an oral and maxillofacial surgeon in Fairbanks, Alaska, one of the first things I want to mention is that the majority of our elderly patients and medically compromised patients that we treat at the hospital could safely be treated in a surgery center at a lot less cost. Many of these patients are on Medicaid and Medicare and would decrease the cost for the state as well as the patients themselves. It's a very costly thing for patients who don't have medical insurance of any kind, which a lot of the elderly people don't. Secondly, a fair number of our patients that require facial reconstruction surgery or orthognathic surgery elect not to either have the surgery done at all or to go to Seattle and Portland for their treatment due to the escalated costs here at the hospital. Not all, but some of these patients could be treated in a surgery center. Thirdly, facial trauma patients that have fairly simple fractures of the face that require treatment at the hospital operating room could also be treated safely in a surgery center. Many of these patients either have Medicaid or have no insurance at all. And when they leave the hospital, they have horrendous bills to pay, and many of them can't meet these payments at all. This is a major complaint we receive from patients all the time, is the cost of their care, not from a surgical standpoint, but from the hospital bill itself. In summary, the Certificate of Need law needs to be repealed. It's an archaic state law. It keeps competition out of Alaska. It limits the doctors that can come to Alaska, that want to come to Alaska, that look at the anti-competition elements here and don't come. Congress has already looked into this and corrected their error in putting this certificate of need in place and repealed that. And I think we need to follow suit. Many, as been brought up earlier, many of these states have already done this, and I think we need to take the lead and do that also. Economically, it's very costly for patients in the state of Alaska to keep things status quo. Initially, the certificate of need actually increased. In reality, the certificate of need actually increases the cost throughout Alaska. Certificate of need, in my opinion, makes absolutely no sense, and is basically important only for those special interest groups who want to keep that. I would like, if Dr. Brock is on your list, I'd like for him to talk, and he has some key information, I believe, on the cost for the military in Alaska that is affected by the certificate of need application. In essence, that's really all I have to say. Questions, I'd be glad to address those.
Thank you. I had one question. So do you take Medicaid patients, and do you have any limitation on the number of Medicaid or Medicaid care patients that you accept?
Yes, I do take Medicare and Medicaid. I have absolutely no limitations on what I take. And to follow through with that from the last speaker, Nancy Shrupp, I concur with everything she said. The hospitals are not the only one that give away free care. I give away several hundred thousand dollars every year, not only from the Medicaid aspect, but just from people who can't pay their bills.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that immensely. Representative Gardner has a question.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your testimony. Do I understand correctly that you work at a surgical center? Do you also have privileges at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital?
Through the chair, representative, I didn't catch your name. I'm sorry.
Gardner.
To answer your question, my business is called Alaska Oral Maxillofacial Surgery Center. It is my practice. I have one partner with me. There's two of us here, actually. It is not a surgery center per se, no. Secondly, yes, I do have full scope privileges at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
I'm sorry.
We have one follow-up question from Representative Gardner.
I've heard that there are some hospitals that won't allow people to do surgery at their facility if they do surgery at a private surgical center. Are you familiar with that? Have you experienced it?
Through the chair, no, I'm not familiar with that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again for your testimony. And now we'll go to Kodiak. Are you online again?
Kodiak? I am this time.
Thank you. Don Roberts, I believe. And would you go ahead and identify yourself again for the record and who you're representing and proceed with your testimony?
Okay, I'm Don Roberts. I represent myself. And I speak against HB 287. I don't believe that healthcare services are best delivered on a competitive basis. When you start talking about competition, you start talking winners and losers, and usually there's one winner and you have a bunch of losers, and what do you do with them?
Excuse me.
In a community, you wind up with one hospital possibly winning, and then you wind up with all the staff, everybody else being unemployed and having no place to go. Basically, I think it ultimately reduces the availability of quality health care services and sacrifices effective services on the altar of administrative efficiency. I think there are some changes. If you want to control the health care costs, you need to find out where the hospitals are spending their money. And I think sometimes, in some cases, they're spending it in places other than health care costs. What I'd like you to consider doing is including a state version of the federal form 990. Also consider a socioeconomic report. I think a lot of healthcare problems are driven by socioeconomic conditions. An aging population person may wind up in the hospital for just because they're getting older. And you may be able to find more cost-effective measures on the preventive side of the event curve than just being than doing treatments or a more expensive treatment facility. I'd also like to see somewhere in the process some commitment from the community other than just statements, a show of hands, more like blood, sweat, and tears, and how these agencies might even actually incorporate the resources of other doctors or other facilities to offset the costs and include the possible viability of the service. It becomes real troublesome when I keep looking at these things. I just keep seeing a healthcare service, and I really don't know if they're talking about a healthcare service, or which to me is a service that's there to keep me healthy, or if they're talking about a crisis service, a treatment service, or recovery service, and how much of this is actually wound up in the administration costs. And I have to confess, this is a little bit off the healthcare issue, but most troubling I find in this whole thing is your definition of person, and this is throughout the legislature, the legislations, and admin codes. You have it here at 7AAC 7-07-900A14, so the person includes HMOs, foundations, trusts, estates, the state, political subdivisions, or other legal entities, and it cites AS 0110-068. So the person includes corporations, companies, partnerships, firms, associations, organizations, businesses, trusts, et cetera, as well as a natural person. And I kind of have a problem with this because, you know, it was natural persons that created the state, that are the state, and created a government and create the legislature and create this whole thing. I don't believe that there, I think there's some philosophical and moral problems when you take a government that says, you know, we're going to create these entities and give them all the same authority of the entities that created us.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Roberts, are you referring to a specific section of this bill referring to persons, or is that a general?
No, that's just in the, I was just taking a look at, I'm relatively new to this certificate of need. I just kind of, somebody mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, and I started doing some research on it, and I just, when I started looking at it, I always start looking at the laws and the existing regulations and to see what kind of makes sense to me, and it has never made sense to me that a government can make a person.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Roberts. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Roberts? Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Roberts, and we'll now go to Greg Polston. Is Greg Polston there?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I am.
Oh, good. Would you go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Greg Polston. I am a pain physician in Anchorage. I represent the Advanced Medical Centers of Alaska. I have been practicing in Alaska for the past 5 years and would like to voice my support for this bill. I believe that by removing the Certificate of Need program, that access to health care will increase in Alaska for Alaskans and will decrease costs. Currently, I am serving on the State Medicaid Committee, both on the Drug Utilization Review Committee and the Pharmacy and Therapeutics Committee, which has developed the preferred drug list over the past 2 years. In working with those committees, I have looked at the costs and tried to maximize care, very similar to why I'm in support of this bill. It appears from some of the testimony that it's niche physicians who are trying to push this through, and I strongly disagree with that. The fact that, as Nurse Kiley presented, these 21 states that have removed this, healthcare costs have not been impacted and have allowed competition to occur and not isolated the hospitals into monopoly type of situations. I also have been given a copy of a report provided by the Commissioner of Health and Social Services discussing a number of projects if the Certificate of Need program was to be removed from the state of Alaska. In reviewing this, I became very excited in seeing all these new facilities that would be provided in the state that are not available here. And as Dr. Sutley described, forcing people to leave the state of Alaska. It creates, it looks like, over an additional 200 beds. It provides a cardiac hospital, a hospital for alcohol and drug problems. In my work with the Medicaid population, I think those areas would provide very good services and allow people to become healthier return back to functioning members of the community and lead better lives. In addition, when I look at these facilities and think about the economic impact of building these centers, the number of jobs that will be provided to the state of Alaska, I believe that this would make the state a stronger place to work and live in.
Thank you, Greg. Advanced Medical Centers, where is that located?
We are actually located in three spots. We have a facility in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Matsu Valley. So we are providing health care throughout the state. I've also done work also at the Kodiak Hospital in the past.
Great. Thank you very much. There's questions. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I have a lot of questions today.
Okay, good.
Thank you, Doctor. I tried to write down your exact words so I make sure I understood, and I had sort of a question I've asked other people. You said something along the lines of 20-some states have removed certificate of need and health care costs have not been impacted. Mm-hmm. So my question is, do you have any documentation?
Yes. I believe that the committee was given a report from the Washington Policy Center, and it was prepared by Mr. Barnes. I believe that Mr. Barnes is actually online waiting to speak. I'd be happy to fax that to you if that's not available. It gives a couple of references as to the impact in the studies. In addition, I have a report prepared by the Florida State University Law Review, also stating some of those questions that you have.
Thank you very much.
Yes, and we would appreciate it if you'd forward those. We don't have that in our packet.
So. I apologize. I don't want to take up time, but could I have the fax number? We could certainly get those to you. I don't know if that's a proper protocol.
Yes, it's 465-3175.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Polston. And now we'll go to Glenda Smith. Are you online?
Yes, I'm here. I represent myself. My name is Glenda Smith. I'm a resident of Eagle River and a patient advocate, a mother of a special needs child. And I was introduced to the bill earlier this year and have been following some of the things that have been going on, and was excited to be able to, I'm very pleased that you're taking a look at this, taking a closer look at the CON laws. Over the years, I've been seeing a lot of people who've been trying to lower the cost of health care, and what I keep actually experiencing firsthand is that the cuts are made for the much-needed services for those with disabilities. And it's unfortunate that we keep looking to cut those things that are most needed for those people that, like my daughter, instead of looking at other ways that we can lower those, the cost of health care by eliminating the CON. I've seen a lot of documentation that states that the CON hasn't been successful in containing the health care spending, and there's no evidence that I've seen that it's helped reduce the cost at all, causing me to wonder why the law still exists. I know there are arguments out there, and I've heard many today, that say that the CON is the answer to a lot of these things. But we don't have to look very far to see that these laws are not the answer to our problems, not to mention that they're outdated. In Alaska, and I've experienced this quite a bit throughout the years, that we don't have access to the specialists that we need, and costing the state a lot of money to send patients out of state, not only folks with disabilities like my daughter, but patients who qualify for Medicaid for their economic reasons. And I know we have extreme difficulty trying to recruit physicians to Alaska, and I'm sure it's not just because of the cold weather either. I really believe that this is a way to improve the rising cost of health care in Alaska and to help many in the process instead of just filling the pockets of a few. And so I so much appreciate all you can do to help remove this, to move this House bill forward. And just want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee members for listening.
Well, thank you for taking time to testify to the committee. Is there anyone that has questions for Ms. Smith? Seeing none, thank you again, and we'll go to Jim Tamai.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. Would you go ahead and pronounce your name for me, as well as go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Dr. Jim Tamai. I'm an orthopedic surgeon, and I practice in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I'm with Advanced Medical Centers of Alaska.
Great. Thank you. Go ahead with your testimony, Mr. Tamai.
I am, as a practicing physician now here in Fairbanks for the past 14 years, I've had the opportunity to make myself familiar with the internal healthcare structures here in the interior. I've been able to witness firsthand some of the strengths of our current systems, as well as some of the inherent weaknesses that we experience here in the interior. One of those weaknesses, in my opinion, is that we only have one specific healthcare facility in our community that is capable of offering the broadest range of services, and by that I mean both outpatient as well as inpatient services as well as surgical services. And this is, I'm speaking, of course, of our one hospital here in the interior, Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. While it's my opinion that we have a very strong hospital here in the interior, one that I believe that our community can be proud of, it's also my opinion that our interior community could benefit significantly from by opening opportunities for other alternative avenues and access to health care, and specifically in the form of outpatient services, and even more specific than that, outpatient ambulatory surgical center services. I am and always have been a firm believer in a free market economy. Intuitively, it just makes good sense to me that the beneficiaries of a competitive system are basically all the members of the society. It makes no sense to me that limiting competition, limiting the providers as well as medical facilities per se, can benefit any of the members of our community. And therefore, I am supporting House Bill 287. I think that, you know, we're in a time post 9/11. I've wondered sometimes with one hospital if for some reason it became involved in a contamination situation, or perhaps even a terrorist situation. It always seemed logical to me that we would benefit from having an alternative facility here in the community that could offer emergency surgical services. And being our only civilian system, Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, I think this does place a bit of a limitation on our community post 9/11. Thank you for allowing me the time to testify.
Thank you, Dr. Tamai. I appreciate that. One question. The bill that we have before us talks about having eliminating CON in a borough, you know, which is can be spread across a large area of 25,000 or more. Do you have any kind of estimation on what population level should be necessary to support a hospital, a general hospital that is doing 24-hour service, and a outpatient surgery center or imaging center?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I can't give you a specific estimate on that, because I believe that that's going to depend on the size of the hospital, as well as the number of employees, you know, that work full time at the hospital to service the facility.
Okay, and so let me get at this a different way. If Fairbanks was 1/4 of its size, would you consider that Fairbanks at that population level would be able to support both a hospital, a imaging center, and a ambulatory surgery center?
I believe it could, but that's only because even though Fairbanks is, in this hypothetical instance, would be 1/4 our present size, being the, you know, the closest regional hospital in the interior, our catchment area, of course, extends to a lot greater, I mean, outside the general population of the Fairbanks community. And I'm, of course, this, of course, even extends outside the North Star Borough.
Sure, and I appreciate that, and I didn't mean to give you much of a hypothetical there, but we're sitting here without, without the knowledge, and we're trying to get the estimation from different people around the state based on previous testimony. So thank you very much. And does anyone else have a question for Dr. Tamai? Representative Gatto has a question.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Doc, if you mentioned, if I can recollect, that it seemed reasonable that competition would be a better way to go. But let me back up here to a situation where, let's say you just have an area where you have a clean slate. Would you say, given a clean slate where there is no current facility, that it would be in the public's best interest to not have a CON and let competition prevail? Or given that situation, do you feel like one good facility should be protected so that we can have a good facility and maybe that would serve the community better?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Gatto. I can tell you that the simple answer and straight answer to your question is, given a clean slate hypothetical situation, yes, I still believe that the community would best be served with competition. In our community now, amongst the medical staff, competition is rampant. It always has been since I moved to the state 14 years ago. I think that's a good thing. I think it's just basic human nature that all of us, regardless of what we do, we will rise to the occasion, if you will. Our motivation, I think, will be intuitive to do the best job that we can, that we perceive we have to, in order to compete. I know full well that my patients have multiple choices as far as my specialty is concerned, and I know for a fact that they exercise those choices on a daily basis, and I think that that serves the community best. I think the same application, however, can be turned over to choices regarding medical facilities, such as hospitals and surgery centers.
Thank you, and Representative Gatto has a follow-up.
Yeah, there are cases where government gives monopolies. For example, in any community, there's usually only one company that supplies electricity to all the homes in the area. We don't have competing companies. My guess is it's probably better to have one single set of power poles rather than parallel power poles, each one trying to outdo the other in supplying electricity at the lowest possible rate. So what we do is we give one company a monopoly, and then we turn around and say, but we're going to regulate the company. Now, what we've done here in the past, I'm kind of looking for an agreement or disagreement here. The Certificate of Need program was essentially similar to that, in that that was the regulation for a single service was their Certificate of Need. Those places that have gone in and got their Certificate of Need now would be facing the competition after they were already given not the monopoly, but the regulation. Is there some parallel here that says monopolies can be very good as long as they're regulated by government?
Again, to Representative Gatto's question, I still firmly believe that competition makes all of us work better, work harder, do a better and more efficient part of our jobs. I think that there's going to be that driving motivation behind all of us, whether regardless of occupation or profession. I can't see any specific segment of our society that could be possibly excluded from that situation. If we have a situation that was created, you know, like you mentioned, our power systems that are created in a monopolistic situation, I think that you're going to see there. It's my fear that complacency breeds in a situation where monopoly exists. And I'm not trying to point the finger at anybody or any group of individuals here. I just think that, in my heart, that this is a basic human nature.
Okay. Thank you very much. We have one more person online, and then we're going to come to Juno here. So we'll go, and thank you again for your testimony, Dr. Tamai.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Tom Piper, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Yes, would you identify yourself and who you represent for the record and go ahead with your testimony?
Thank you. My name is Tom Piper. I'm the principal of MacQuest Consulting, who has been working with the Department of Health during 2005 in helping to rebuild the regulations for Certificate of Need. I have also in the past been director of the Certificate of Need program in Missouri for over 21 years. Currently, at the moment, I am in Seattle working with the Department of Health here. Shall I proceed?
Yes, go ahead and proceed.
Thank you. In speaking against HB 287, I'd like to point out that in my past experience, I have tracked Certificate of Need programs for over 17 years. And I've worked with a number of other states in their Certificate of Need and planning programs. And I've also worked with the National Council of State Legislators, the American Health Planning Association, and the American Public Health Association. I would like you to, I understand, Mr. Chairman, that you are looking not at a PowerPoint presentation, but actually a paper reproduction of that. Is that correct?
We have the paper reproduction here, yes.
Okay. Well, I will refer to each of these, and if you would go to the third slide, which has to do with a matrix of that shows the number of states down the left-hand side and a variety of services across the top. It's called the CON matrix. It's a 2005 relative scope and review thresholds.
Yes, we have that.
What I'd like to point out on this is that although Alaska has one of the broadest programs, it's not the most severe program by any stretch of imagination. There are other states that are far more severe in their actual conduct of the program or in their conclusions. But it is right now very close to the top of the chart. Were House Bill 287 to be passed, it would be down in the bottom with only long-term care along with these other states, which include Oregon, Ohio, Nebraska, Louisiana. And if you'll go to the next map that shows the entire country, I have highlighted these states. And I'd like to tell you what has happened in Ohio in particular. And why I've chosen Ohio is because they are probably the most the best information that we have on what happened immediately after deregulation for most of its program, which would closely parallel what's being proposed here. That's probably some of the most recent experience that has happened in deregulation Certificate of Need. And I'd like to particularly thank Gretchen McBeth, who is an attorney in Columbus, Ohio, for having collected much of this information. So I will fairly quickly go through the points of illustration of this impact. Ohio General Assembly initially repealed started the three-year repeal process in 1995. And they had Certificate of Need for 20 years for most of the services, but all facilities, services, beds, capital, and equipment were taken out of review except for long-term care. If you look at the next slide that says phase out 1995 to 1998, this will show you that starting in 1995, six of those services were deregulated. In 1996, three of them were deregulated, 97, one, and in 1998, the remaining seven, for a total of 17 services that were taken out. I think it is instructive to point out that Ohio was one of the very few states that does not have hospital licensure. Instead, they had the list of services you see here from cardiac catheterization down through psychiatric and obstetrical, through stem cell transplants are all handled under joint commission surveys and national reviews, psychiatric and obstetrical services being the notable exception. I also point out there are freestanding services in Ohio. Most are licensed, also have quality review, but neither licensure nor quality review were any kind of barrier to market entry into the establishment of new services or the expansion of such services. Now let's look at the hospitals specifically. Of the existing hospitals that were licensed in 1997, you can see that there are 214. Within 3 years after that, that dropped to 206, and you can see that there's a commensurate loss to almost 7,000 beds. But if you go to the next slide, what you'll see is that there were some new hospitals, in fact, 19 new hospitals that were established for a total of 829 beds. Overall, as shown on the next slide, you'll see that there was a decline. And this shows the types of beds that showed in the decline. I'll not go over that in detail. You can look at it at your leisure or follow up with me later if you would like. In looking at cardiac catheterization, that actually increased since deregulation. And cardiac catheterization in Ohio can only be done in a hospital setting by state law. But you'll see that it went from 86 units, hospitals that had that service to 94 hospitals. Actually, 42% of the hospitals had it before they start deregulation. After deregulation, 54% had it happen. The same with open heart surgery. You saw that 20% of the hospitals had it before deregulation. Within 3 years after that, you had 29%. Looking at imaging services, in 1995, MRIs were deregulated, and there were 23. Within 4 years after that, you see a quantum jump up to 126 new MRI units, and at that time, they had 65 more in the pipeline, because in Ohio, they do have a notification process, not a CON process, but a notification process when a new service is being brought online. And in 1995, there were 35 in-house magnetic resonance imagers. After that, almost every hospital had one. When we look at radiation therapy, you're talking about linear acceleration accelerators for the treatment of cancer. In 1998, there were 10 such units. Only a year later, after deregulation, they had almost tripled in the number of units. And at that time, they had letters of intent or notices of intent in for six more units just at that time. We move on to the next slide to ambulatory surgery facilities, which also increased in deregulation. That may have been even greater increase than what you saw in diagnostic imaging. You had 31 at the time of deregulation. 6 years later, you had 186. It's a huge jump in the number of ambulatory surgery centers. As we looked at outpatient dialysis centers, the story continues. 1995, you had a little over 1,000. Just 6 years later, you had over 2,100. It more than doubled within that short period of time. What we see basically, as you look across all of these factors, and I'm just giving these to you very quickly, and unfortunately, one of the things that was lost after this was the ability to track the additional units. And much of the statistical tracking systems that were in Ohio were lost at the same time. So the characteristics, the major characteristics that we saw in deregulation in Ohio were, first of all, there is a significant loss of inner city hospitals. The new hospitals that you saw were mostly in the suburbs and more affluent areas. So much of their safety net system had been lost. A substantial increase in ambulatory surgery facilities, other kinds of freestanding facilities. Many of them are struggling right now because there are only so many patients that you can address. As we look across the country on the next slide, the thing I would point out is that this has been in sharp contrast to a trend across the country where you're actually seeing certificate of need programs being strengthened. In the state of Washington, legislature last year passed a bill that was specifically to improve certificate of need, and they have several task forces that are working on that. Maine, with their Indigo project, has integrated the expansion of insurance coverage and certificate of need coverage and combine those together, and also trying to cap the number of expenditures that are happening there. They have dramatically improved their situation over the last 2 years. North Carolina has done the same. Tennessee has completely rewritten their CON program, made it stronger. Indiana and Pennsylvania, who don't have certificate right now, both had major efforts in the legislature that almost brought it back. They're predicting next year that may very well bring certificate need back in those states. So I would take you to the next to the last slide, that when we're looking at certificate of need, it is indeed a balance between regulation and competition. It is there intended to protect community interests. What kind of community interest? Well, first of all, you need to note that over 50% of the money that goes into health care comes from public sources, Medicare, Medicaid, other third-party types of public sources of reimbursement. Pricing and quality information, were it there for the patient, might be a much better situation. But you can't find the price of healthcare individual services. The second problem that you see is that quite often the patient is not the person who is purchasing those services, because quite often is a physician who is making those decisions and is the employer who is actually buying the health care coverage for the employee, if in fact they're employed. If they're not, it's the government, or maybe they're not covered at all. So what is needed is to have better community-oriented health services and facility plans, better pricing and quality information, and maintenance of the public forum for a broad range of services, but certainly not to reduce the scope of services down to long-term care only. So I thank you for this opportunity to briefly give you the story, particularly of what has happened to Ohio and history of deregulation, and that there's good reason to maintain what you have in Alaska now. A lot of effort was put in last year in order to improve it, and I think that you have a system that really works. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I am open to any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Piper. I guess I have a question trying to get at these issues. I see a decrease in the number of hospital beds, but a general increase in the number of procedures or number of hospitals that provided all these treatments. Do you have any information on the cost of the procedures and what happened between while CON was there and then the cost when you had many more facilities providing those services?
Recent reports that I've read, even this past week out of Ohio, have indicated that they're saying that they're having many problems in state government because costs have escalated so steeply. They have not reported what those costs are. In fact, that's one of the real problems that we have seen across the country, is of the 14 states that do not have certificate of need, trying to find out the impact of the loss of certificate need versus other changes that have happened has been all but impossible.
Okay, well, if you are able to come up with that any of that information on costs, we would sure appreciate getting that to us, because we're not only looking at, you know, beds and the number of places that perform procedures, but we want to look at what is the effect on cost. And so if you are able to do that, please get that to us as soon as possible. The Representative Anderson had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom had a question. Who are you paid by to testify? Who pays the piper?
Well, that's an excellent question. No one. I have done this voluntarily. Last year, as I indicated, I was under contract with the Department of Health to help improve the certificate need program. But the testimony that I give you today is entirely on my own, and I'm on vacation time right now.
And then,
thank you for taking your vacation time. When you said Department of Health, was that the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. And Representative Anderson has a follow-up.
Follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The second question is, you understand the difficulty, I'm sure, more than we, with respect to looking at the statistics state by state, nationally, looking at the and listening to the testimony of hospitals saying we have infrastructure, like Matsu Regional said, that we've spent over $100 million. If you change the rules of, I hate to call it the game, but the game, then you will adversely affect us because we will ultimately or conceivably lose patients. Conversely, you see these other companies, Open Imaging and others from Fairbanks, that testify, hence Representative Lynn's legislation, that say, wait, we have competent staff, great facility, equipment that in some respects is better than some of the larger hospitals, if not all of them. Give us a chance to compete. We will give a fine product to the patients. What do you find that this balance, this weighing of public policy, occurs in all the states where the CON arises in legislation?
I would say the vast majority, yes, because the question of the value of certificate of need has repeatedly been questioned, and in states, take Maine for example, they have done many studies, and every time that they finished a study, they improved certificate of need and expanded it more. But it is very difficult because healthcare is expensive. Healthcare does not play by the same rules as what many other kinds of services do. You know, you know what the price is when you go to Ace Hardware, you go out to get a meal, you go out to buy commodities. Healthcare is not a commodity, and it plays by different rules. Reimbursement is done differently. It is so frustrating for folks like yourselves in the legislature who are trying to do reasonable policy to accommodate everyone, and I have learned over the past year that I spent working with in Alaska that Alaska is unique in many, many ways, where you have several large centers of population, but you have huge areas where a hospital is barely striving to hang on, and it's a safety net situation. And they may never achieve, you know, the luxury of having somebody else to compete with. But at the same time, certificate of need or programs like this and regulation by any name do not stop competition. They are a doorway to excellence that means that, and I'm very familiar with your new regulations, those were set up based upon excellence and performance. So that if a new applicant for an entry into the market can meet those expectations of excellent performance, they will most certainly be approved. But your new system is based upon very competitive values. And so I think steps have already been taken toward making yours much more responsive and much more reasonable system. It's not perfect. None of them are perfect, I would grant you.
And Mr. Piper, do you have any, is there any quantitative data or any quantitative estimates of what size of a population base you need before certificate of need doesn't fulfill its purpose, or where we could more easily get into the competitive model?
I know of no such model.
Okay.
In fact, what I have seen in practice has been that the larger the population, the greater the need for an oversight into the market. Because, as I said earlier, there is only a given set of patients. Now, some would say that physician-owned services and quoting Dr. Wenberg and then Dr. Mitchell are saying that if a physician owns a particular service like an MRI, their statistics have indicated they're more prone to use that service than, say, in a nonprofit setting, probably in a hospital. But my experience has been, my observations have been, that the larger the population, the more oversight that you need to make sure that you have quality people who are entering into the market, and to make sure that they can achieve the amount of volume that is needed to provide an excellent service. In healthcare, it is a well-known fact that the more you do, the better you are. Open heart, cardiac catheterization, many other services have shown that very well. So you need to have minimum utilization standards for excellence to hold down mortality figures, for one.
Okay, thank you. Representative Sisna has a question.
And Mr. Chair, if I can ask two, and I'll ask them at the same time, just to...
Sure.
I think it'd be easy to remember them. And Mr. Popper, number one, in the Ohio example you were using, how many, if any, medical school hospitals or county hospitals were there, and what was the outcome on those, if you know? And then the second question is there any transparency in Ohio, either before or after, or while, both before and after, of costs of healthcare? And thank you.
On your first question, I do not have those statistics. I can contact the folks in Ohio that I'm very familiar with and see if I can get that for you. On your second question about transparency, I believe that there is some new efforts that are just recently emerging that are starting to improve the situation in Ohio that have directly to do with that. What I've seen, first of all, is the Ohio Office for Health Policy. They appear to have published some data on the hospitals. I have not seen that data yet. I'm still in the process of trying to get my hands on it.
Thank you.
But there are some steps that are moving forward on that kind of transparency.
And if you can get
it done rather grudgingly.
And if you can get any of that data to us, we would sure appreciate it. Representative Gardner has a question. We do have 8 people signed up here, and I do want to make sure we get to anybody that has to leave. So as we go down the list that are here in Juneau, if you're going to be here, please, delay your testimony until after we get the other folks. Representative Gardner?
Thank you. I actually have 2 questions. On page 5 of your presentation, and you have the number of Ohio hospitals that have closed since deregulation, is it not possible that the certificate of need system sort of was an artificial support for hospitals that weren't really needed, and that what you had there is some natural consequences of removing the artificial environment?
I think the certificate of need has been called an enfranchiser of services that are currently in existence, and I think that was certainly the case there. But I think also I have to understand that CON doesn't really protect those hospitals. It simply they had passed muster at some point in time to make sure that they had a certificate to provide those services. I'm not sure I know the total effect. I do think that some of them were on the verge of closure from what I was told. I don't think it was all of them. But I think it's a combination of factors to be. Healthcare is not cleanly dissected into regulation or the effect of fee changes or that sort of thing. And those overlaps are very difficult to try to differentiate one from another.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I have another question.
Follow-up or another question, Representative Gardner.
Thank you. And as part of this, I want to thank you for doing this on your vacation and out of your own commitment to the issue.
Actually, I must tell you, I have the greatest respect for the state of Alaska. I think that it's a wonderful state.
Thank you. You stated that Certificate of Need doesn't stop competition, and we've had a lot of talk about the whole issue of competition. And what your slides have shown is that actually when Certificate of Need was removed, that there were a lot more facilities that opened up. But what's very interesting to me is that the reason we want competition is because of the effect on quality and price, quality of services. And of course, those are going to be really hard to measure and report. But I find it really interesting that there's nothing in here about cost and whether that's kind of increased or decreased along with Certificate of Need. So.
And Representative Gardner, I asked him to see if he could get some data on cost and send it to us.
Okay, and just for the record, sure. My question is sort of a little bit broader than yours because it was for specific surgical centers or something I think you asked. So, thank you.
Okay, and so any data that you do have on costs and the cost changes would be very appreciated. And thank you again for your testimony. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
I'm going to go to here in the room, and as I go down the name, if you are going to be staying here, please kind of defer until the end so that we can make sure that we get everybody that has to get to a plane. Fred Brown, are you here?
And I have a reservation tonight.
Okay, that's fine. Great. You can tell we think that's a very important subject, and that's why we're taking so long on the testimony. So
thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
And to anybody that testifies here as well, if you have written testimony, we'd really appreciate you leaving that with us so that we can put it in our record for review. Thanks. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Fred Brown of Fairbanks, Alaska. I am the president of ASCA AFSCME Local 52's Health Benefits Trust. I'm the secretary of the Alaska Healthcare Cost Management Corporation, affectionately known as the Coalition. I am the secretary of the Fairbanks Central Labor Council, and I'm here today speaking on behalf of the Fairbanks Central Labor Council, which has taken a position on this bill. The position is that the current state law requiring a certificate of need for the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services before expending more than $1 million towards improving or building a healthcare facility is counterproductive to providing cost-effective healthcare for Alaskans. And as was earlier mentioned, it is also inconsistent with the cherished American principles of free enterprise and competition. The Fairbanks Central Labor Council is affiliated with 18 unions in Interior Alaska, representing approximately 5,500 members. These union members work in public and private sectors, in construction and in service industries, and on large government contracts, as well as for small business owners. Many of these members are married and have families, all have an interest in maintaining access to affordable health care. Alaska's union health plans have struggled to provide continuing valuable health benefits despite the increasing cost of health care. And communities with only one health care provider, the lack of competition has kept health care costs significantly higher than communities, notably Anchorage in our experience, where competition exists. The state has encouraged monopolistic activities by sole source healthcare facilities by creating significant barriers to entry to competitive facilities. In sum, the Fairbanks Central Labor Council believes that the current law regulating certificates of need does not well serve the needs of our union members or their families, nor does it serve the needs of many other Alaskans who seek affordable health care. It's time to change the law. Thank you.
Thank you. I had one question. That the health care in other areas where their CON is higher than in Anchorage, and yet we had testimony from the doctors in Fairbanks and that we had such things as spinal MRIs at 1490 at the hospital and 1745 and 1975 were the cost for the same procedure at the other centers, and like figures, and also I think it was 3200 for the knee orthoscopic surgery and 4800 in Anchorage. Are those at odds with your basic understanding and your experience?
In our experience, I can say generally that the cost of our hospitalization and hospital treatment in Anchorage is substantially less expensive than Fairbanks. In terms of the specific treatments that you described, I can get those that information. I don't have it readily available with me.
Okay, and we would appreciate that if you could get that information for us so that we have, we're sitting here without the data, and the data really helps us as well as the impressions of people. So thank you very much. I appreciate that. And Representative Gardner has a question.
Thank you, and thank you for waiting here to give your testimony. I think when you first started speaking, you referred to the cost of the CON program. Were you talking about administering the program?
Generally, what I was speaking to through the chair was with respect to our observation that when we have competition, we've observed in our health benefits trust that we're able to contract for much less expensive coverage because we're able to commit that we'll provide the volume of patients, and therefore they can provide a volume discount. We don't have that opportunity in Fairbanks, and so for that reason, in our experience, we support competition, as does happen in Anchorage.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And
like I say, if you have written testimony and if you are able to find that data, we'd appreciate that.
Thank you.
Let's go to Alan Gross.
Mr. Chair.
Dr. Gross. That's fine. And for the folks that are here, we are losing some members, but let me assure you that this is going to be listened to by the people here. They'll be online, and there's a lot of interest in this subject, and I know that the entire committee will look at that, as well as we'll pass notes to them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Would you go ahead and identify yourself for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dr. Alan Gross. I was born and raised here in Juneau. I'm a board-certified orthopedic surgeon and in private practice here in Juneau for about 12 years. And I represent Juneau Orthopedics, a group of three orthopedic surgeons here in Juneau. I'd like to speak in favor of House Bill 287. I don't have the written endorsement of all the physicians in Juneau, but I can tell you from surveying many of them that the vast majority of the physicians here locally are in favor of eliminating the certificate of need law. I think it's outdated. It protects large hospitals, but most importantly, it doesn't protect or enhance the quality of care. We physicians here in Juneau frequently lose patients to Seattle, both for quality of care issues and cost issues. Occasionally, we'll lose somebody to Anchorage, but usually Seattle. A group of us about 2 years ago attempted to create a very small single-room procedure center where we could bring patients for very minor procedures. It would be much cheaper than going to the hospital, would be very convenient for both us and our patients, and we were denied the ability to do this because of the existing certificate of need law. Specifically, House Bill 511 included the leasehold or the net present value of the lease to be included in the $1 million cap, And by that very definition, automatically you're over the $1 million cap because they're including the lifetime of the building in that lease. Thus, it was impossible to build much of anything bigger than an outhouse with the current definition and interpretation of the law. There's a plastic surgeon here in town who can't do aesthetic surgery under general anesthesia because of, who can't compete with the facilities down in Seattle because of the hospital's refusal to create a package deal, which hospitals down south do for aesthetics. It's just way too expensive to do an aesthetic procedure here in Juneau under a general anesthetic at the hospital than it would be at many of the facilities in the Seattle area, and thus most aesthetic patients go south. Representative Sisnett asked about free care given, providing care to the indigent at these facilities. I don't believe it makes a difference whether or not it's at the surgical center or at the hospital. You're still going to provide the care. It needs to be done. If, for example, we had a small surgical center here in Juneau, it would be to the patient's advantage because it would be cheaper to have it done at that facility, at the surgical center facility, to the surgeon's advantage because it would be convenient, and also better care for the patient because you've got a focused center that specializes in our situation in orthopedics. Over and over and over again, we've come across quality issues here at Bartlett that we feel would be solved if we were able to have our own small procedure center. Bartlett's an excellent facility, but I think in our situation in orthopedics and possibly in other fields as well, we can do better on our own and provide better care for patients. And what brought along our desire to have a small surgical facility was not the ability to make money out of it. It was frustration over quality issues. And the CON law stymies that. It doesn't protect the quality at all. So we strongly urge you to pass this bill.
Thank you very much. Reverend Coggan, do you have a question?
Since nobody else is here to ask questions.
Yeah.
one of the questions that pops up in this discussion is the difference between, say, an ambulatory surgery center and what might go on in a hospital, and comparing one as a niche market or a niche doctor. Do you feel that if you had a small surgery center that would be considered a niche? How do you see that as, say, operating in conjunction with a hospital for healthcare in Juneau generally?
Well, I would still probably at least half of my practice would be done through the hospital in its operating room. I see my use of a surgical center here in Juneau as for minor outpatient procedures. Probably half of what I do involves admitting patients to the hospital. It's interesting, at one of the medical staff meetings about a year ago, the issue of economic credentialing came up, and that term wasn't used, but I hope you're all familiar with that. That's when a hospital can sanction a physician for being in competition with the hospital. The medical staff resoundingly passed a resolution against supporting this, and one of the members of the hospital medical staff, the hospital medical board, who is also a long-term Alaskan born and raised, got up and argued for competition, saying that it would be good for this hospital, that's what Bartlett needs to be a good hospital and to keep it honest and make it provide quality care. And I was very surprised to hear him in favor of that, because it would obviously hurt Bartlett economically, at least at first. But he was at least honest about admitting that it would be better for patient care to have some competition in this town.
Could you repeat the catchphrase for sanctioning again?
Economic credentialing.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Coghill. And the question that I've asked to several people, and it appears that with a base population of 30,000, you think that the competitive model works.
Absolutely. And actually, of course, the catchment in Juneau is much bigger than 30,000. we probably draw from closer to 50,000.
Right.
But I don't think that that would be a problem in here in Juneau, and I'm sure that the hospital would continue to thrive.
Do you think that a hospital like Peterborough or Ketchikan or Sitka or the smaller areas, do you think they're in the same situation?
Well, I don't think anybody would attempt to do a surgical center in a town like Peterborough where surgery is only done once every 2 months there anyway. It wouldn't make sense to do something like that. So why anybody would want to venture to do that, I don't know. So I'm in favor of the capitalistic approach of let the market bear it, you know, and feel it out.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. Do you have any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. Rod Bettett.
Chairman, he lives in Juneau and doesn't have to leave. He can come back.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Lori Herman, and you'll...
I don't have to go back. It's my job to be here when you need me.
Great. And Paul Foos, I'm...
Same for me.
Same. Sam Corismo.
And I have a copy of my statement here. So.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to speak to this committee. My name is Samuel J. Corismo. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Alaska Open Imaging Center with locations in Wasilla, Anchorage, Soldotna, and just more recently, Fairbanks. Today we have four doctors, 54 employees, and four imaging centers. As a physicians group in the radiology profession, our business has prospered on the core value of service. We bring referring physicians alternatives in the outpatient imaging needs that place care and compassion to the patients. We have introduced new technologies that are saving Alaskans' lives, such as open imaging, web-based imaging services, and PET, meaning positron emission tomography. Responding to our leadership, other providers are also finally making those services available. We've been in operation in Anchorage, Wasilla, and Kenai for the past few years, and in all those areas, the local hospitals have embarked on major expansion projects, showing that we were not a detriment to their operations. Our success shows that doctors and their patients appreciate having the choice to access our quality service and our commitment to cost reduction. We recently opened a facility in Fairbanks and have achieved the same level of support and appreciation from the community. Unfortunately, after two rulings by Commissioner Jackson that Alaska Open Imaging Center is a physicians group not covered by the Alaska CON laws, Banner Health Corporation through Fairbanks Memorial Hospital has filed a lawsuit against the department and Alaska Open Imaging Center seeking to shut down our operation to restrict Fairbanks consumers' access to quality, affordable healthcare services. This is just another example of how Alaska CON laws are being abused to the detriment of Alaskans and why it should be done away with. We do not use public money to build our facilities, and when state funds are spent on Medicaid services at AOIC, the charges are substantially less than hospital charges for the same procedure, i.e. facility charge to those entities. And by the way, I'd like to add, we do not self-refer at all. We are strictly on a referral business, and therefore we totally compete with every entity out there. Strictly on our service. We have no way of self-referral. And then last, the hospitals say they need monopoly pricing because they take low-income patients through no-pay, low-pay, charity, and such. I'm here to tell you, we provide more than our fair share. At 18% of our gross revenues in 2005 and preceding in 2004 at 15%. I believe that this may be even higher than those services provided by the hospitals. Thank you, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Representative Coghill, do you have any questions?
Somewhere here I left a question.
From previous testimony, the question came up of the mandated care. Certainly, I don't suppose your business would fall into the mandated care issue. I guess the question, you talked about indigent care. So is there a level of pay that you get that is better or worse than hospitals?
through the chair, Representative Cocchio, we, first off, we will service any patient, any referring physician needing services from us, even after hours and on weekends, which we have done numerous times. As to the pay difference, yes, there is a structure that is completely different from what we receive as in reimbursement from Medicaid and even Medicare. That reimbursements are that hospitals receive what's called facility charges, and it is a contracted amount to the state of Alaska that they receive on top of the flat fee that is set by the department or the Medicaid group, CMS, Centers of Medicaid and Medicare Services. That fee is set. The hospitals would receive four charges for the extra on top of that flat charge. Being an ambulatory surgery center or an imaging center, you only pay a flat fee. There is no other facility charge to those independent or standalone freestanding facilities.
Okay, and then the other question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Cogger.
This is, once again, I'm trying to fit what you do with alongside hospitals.
Yes.
My guess is that you wouldn't have docs that, or technicians that worked in the hospital and with you at the same time then.
Actually, we have done that before.
Is that right?
Yes. We can contract or set up a temporary service.
Is there a hospital privileging process that goes with that?
Well, fortunately for us, we have our doctors are credentialed in two other hospitals.
I see.
Here in this state of Alaska.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I'd like to think of more wise questions, but I can't think of any.
Well, and one question, you know, I've been asking, and I want to give you an opportunity as well. Do you see any facilities or any community size where the CON, shall we say, protection is reasonable?
This is one of the reasons why I believe HB 287 is so important as to the discussion in the grand scheme of things. As far as small communities, we as a corporate entity have no desire to even step in those small centers, only because the level of ability to put in the amount of resources that would be needed, it just makes better sense for them to travel, just like the hospitals, you know, that in the smaller communities they travel for the other services. I do believe in the capitalistic competitive markets. But in this case, because of the particular needs and what CON has been here for so long, and I will say that for 27 years that the CON has existed, it's going to take a little longer than just to dismantle it right tomorrow if it were ability. So you've got to have some way of moving towards that model. And if it means protecting the small communities, I'm for it.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
And really appreciate you being able to testify in person to us. And sorry that to everybody that it's gotten so late, but we wanted to get full testimony from everybody that wanted to be able to talk. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Jeremy Hayes. Mr. Hayes, would you go ahead and identify yourself for the record and who you represent, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Cogill, my name is Jeremy Hayes. I represent Advanced Medical Centers of Alaska. And before I start, I'd just like to say thank you for hearing the bill today, and I appreciate the opportunity to give my testimony in support of House Bill 287. I know by now you've probably got a little bit of background, but just quickly, as you guys probably know, in 1982, less than 8 years after the federal CON mandate, the federal government acknowledged the failure of certificate of need laws to reduce health care costs and repealed the mandate altogether. Almost 25 years later, and with the health care environment completely different than that of the original CON era, Alaska's certificate of need remains and is as ineffective as it was more than two decades ago. But rather than repeal or scale back our CON laws, as other states have done, Alaska has made them even more stringent. In 2006, Alaska is the second most regulated healthcare state in the country and has costs that are 40% higher than the national average. We support repealing our CON laws as Alaska continues to see some of the most expensive healthcare costs in the country, continue to rise. The rising costs of medical care in Alaska is hurting our families, raising workers' compensation costs, making insurance, putting the insurance out of economic range for individuals and for companies, and raising Medicaid costs in the state. While the certificate of need process was initially implemented with the intent to control healthcare costs and prevent duplication of services, it has failed in that regard while instead driving prices up, restricting consumers' medical choices, and protecting hospitals from potential competitors who could accomplish the very goal the CON program strives for, which is lower healthcare costs. Alaska's CON program no longer serves the public interest, if indeed it ever did. The stated purpose of the program was to foster a healthcare system that controls costs and meets changing needs. Yet to succeed, such a system requires the very flexibility the Certificate of Need program prevents, basically. In a state experiencing growth and demographic change, I feel that the Certificate of Need law prevents providers from adapting to the changing need of the community effectively. This bill, if passed, would have tremendous economic effect on the residents of Alaska in the form of huge health care savings. We feel it's time that Alaskans are given an answer to their quest for affordable medical care. Since the 1980s, when states were released of their obligation from the federal government to maintain CON laws, numerous studies have examined the change in health care costs as states eliminated those laws. This is something that you had asked about earlier. If certificate of need laws were working as advertised, then one would expect to see a rise in costs once the certificate of need in states were taken away. In other words, states that eliminated certificate of need laws, what you'd expect to see is you would expect to see costs go up if, in fact, certificate of need were working in controlling those costs. In fact, this is not the case. One of the most widely referenced studies was written by Duke University professors Christopher Conover and Frank Sloan and published in the Journal of Health, Politics, Policy, and Law. They found that output restrictions, which resulted from CON laws, led to higher, not lower, costs and higher profits for the hospitals. The authors point out that CON laws resulted in higher costs per day and per admission in the hospitals, along with higher hospital profits. So in states where CON laws remain, patients are charged more money more often than in states that repealed the law. Simply put, the result of repealing CON regulations is lower health care costs for the people of that state. Studies throughout the U.S. have arrived at similar conclusions. The data indicates that a program designed to reduce cost, improve quality, and promote access has not achieved any of these goals. In addition to the 14 states with no CON laws, which are home to more than one-third of Americans, show no higher rate of health care costs or spending due to the lack of such laws. In states with less restrictive certificate of need programs, hospitals are increasingly facing competition from ambulatory surgery centers, which offer minor surgical procedures that do not require an overnight stay. These facilities offer the same surgery as a hospital, but at a significantly lower price. It is one of the ways the market is adjusting to make health care delivery more efficient and cost-effective. Established hospitals in heavily regulated CON states like Alaska, however, use the CON law to prevent such facilities from opening in their city, thus blocking access to health care choice and lower costs to the consumer. The Certificate of Need program's chief goal is to reduce health care costs, something it has not been successful in accomplishing. There has been no evidence that CON regulations lower the cost of health care in Alaska, a fact which alone should be sufficient reason to repeal a law specifically designed to do just that. Regarding the competition that the CON would facilitate, there is possibly no proposition in economics that is more accepted than the idea that if you want to reduce costs of something, you foster an environment that encourages competition and one that discourages monopolistic practices. It is as faulty to think that limiting the supply of healthcare facilities can reduce healthcare costs as it would be to think that oil prices could be lowered by producing less oil. Competition brings lower prices, more convenience, better quality, and new technology and innovations. Hospitals with CON protection have a franchise monopoly which provides no incentive for it to exercise cost control or better services. The owners of these existing facilities can charge inflated prices for their services, which continues to raise costs by restricting the entry of cost-effective providers into the market. Facility duplication is the heart of competition. Indeed, the very definition of a monopoly market is one where there is no duplication. This is why consumers in monopoly markets lose. They are denied the option of turning to others who are providing duplicated services when monopoly providers act like monopolists. Market forces generally allocate society's resources far better than government planning. Everyday experience shows that when the market is free to operate under minimal government control, the result is abundant quality service at a low price. In reality, the continuation of CWEN regulations cannot be justified either theoretically or empirically. In fact, from the perspective of sound economics, the reverse is true. If one desired to devise a policy for any market whose purpose would be to reduce efficiency, raise cost, raise prices, and reduce quality, Alaska's existing Certificate of Need program would be highly recommended. In researching countless journals and published articles, one is hard-pressed to find even one article that asserts that CON laws succeed in lowering health care costs. One thing Certificate of Need studies have done is elicited a remarkable evaluative consensus, and that is that they don't work. Over the last two decades, the Federal Trade Commission has done several studies on the impact of CON laws, both nationally and for specific states. The FTC's consistent conclusion can be summarized in its most recent study, released jointly with the Department of Justice in July 2004. The agencies believe that the CON programs can pose serious competitive concerns. They found that where CON programs are intended to control healthcare costs, there is considerable evidence that they actually drive prices up by fostering anti-competitive barriers to entry. The report goes on to say that evidence does not support the view that CON regulations reduce the cost of providing health care and urges states to consider whether such programs best serve their citizens' health care needs. There's a reason that Congress repealed state CON requirements just a few years after mandating them. There's a reason 14 states, which make up over a third of this country's population, have completely repealed their CON laws. And there's a reason why six additional states have repealed every part of their CON regulations, save for long-term care facilities. And that is because they don't work at controlling costs, plain and simple. If they did, Alaska wouldn't have some of the most costly health care in the country. And just briefly to give you guys some of the evidence that you guys had talked about, some of the people that called in mentioned some things I'd like to touch base on. Mr. Lynch called in, the first caller, and said that he was concerned about surgery centers coming into the market and with self-referrals. Well, I know that has been a point and sometimes a valid point. I feel there's only one thing that's worse than a facility that can self-refer, and that's a facility that has a monopoly, one that has no other competition. They automatically get all the business. They don't need to self-refer because they automatically already have it. So if we're going to split hairs here, what's worse, self-referrals or a system that has a monopoly in that area? Also, the one thing I wanted to point out with Mr. Gould, he called in and said that actually costs would rise if we got rid of CON. He pointed to four different, he evidently secret shopped a couple places around the state to see what costs were. And basically, I believe that's a statistic that can be used by either side. I could pick up the phone and call and find four places where the surgery center cost would be much lower than what it would be in a hospital. In fact, if you look at the fiscal note that was put on the initiative, you can look at the back page, and it actually shows that the cost at surgery centers is actually lower than the cost of hospitals, and that's coming from the Department of Social Services. Also, Mr. Stevens called in and said that this is something that that Mr. Chair has brought up, said that it would only work in states with a large population. Getting rid of the CON is only going to be effective in states that have large population. Let me just list a few of the states that have had been successful at repealing CON laws altogether. In fact, they have no CON laws whatsoever. Those include Idaho, Kansas, New Mexico, North Dakota, South Dakota, Utah, and Wyoming. Those are two states that we have a larger population than already. And most of the states that have repealed, as you can see, are states that have a very small population, with the exception of California and Texas, maybe Pennsylvania as well. Also, he mentioned charity care. I know Sam just said that charity care is something that's across the board. I do agree. Charity care is something that's not just given by the hospital. It's given by many providers in each service area. The only difference is that the other providers who provide charity care, aside from the hospital, are not subsidized to the tune of $25 million a year by the government, like hospitals are. So they're providing true charity care. It's not charity care that gets reimbursed at a later date. And the last thing he said is that surgery centers aren't forced to see everyone. They're not open 24 hours a day. If surgery centers were paid for charity care and paid equally and had sort of additional Medicare payments from the state, as Representative Coghill pointed out earlier, they could afford to stay open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's the conclusion. I appreciate you guys letting me give my view in support of House Bill 287. Are there any questions?
Representative Coghill.
The Duke study that you referenced, is that something that you can get to the committee? Or
absolutely.
A reference to it, or maybe if it's something you can put in a portfolio, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem at all.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Representative Coghill.
Probably this is going to be a comment, so you can slap me if you want.
I better slap you now. Wait a minute.
All right.
We'll get the commentary.
I guess I'll hold tight. The other thing is, do you right now look for a relationship with the hospital in credentialing?
Do I look for a relationship?
Do you work with a hospital at all right now?
I do not.
Okay. All right. Because I know that the competition thing strains the relationship. So I'll save my comments for the next time.
One more thing I did want to point out related to that, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair and Representative Coghill, is I know that you had asked, Representative Gardner had asked, she had heard that there were instances where doctors were denied privileges because they attempted to open up surgery centers that were denied. And I do have a very good example of that. There is a doctor, a pain management physician in Fairbanks by the name of Dr. Nancy Cross. And she is far more qualified. She's a fellowship-trained, doubly board-certified physician. She has more training, more qualifications, and is better qualified as a physician than any of the pain management physicians at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. Yet she has been denied privileges for 4 years because she wanted to open up her own facility.
Well, Mr. Hayes, what I'd like you to do is ask her to send in. I don't want to get hearsay.
Okay.
From other,
if you
other
don't,
folks.
I will.
Sure.
Yeah, but
okay,
we would appreciate the information, but I just don't, you know, when she's not here or, you know, I'd like
I
her
understand.
To address it. So, thank you.
I keep my mouth shut.
No, that's fine. We want the information, but we just want to, you know, get it firsthand, and we don't.
Absolutely.
You understand what I mean. So, thank you. I think that's the only questions we have here. Let's see. We have Mr. Bedded, Ms. Lori Herman, Paul Foos, and Anthony Lombardo. Are all of you able to come back when there are more of the committee here?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I would appreciate it if you wouldn't mind coming back when this is next heard, because although the committee will hear the presentation on the, you know, on gavel to gavel, they may have direct questions that they would like to ask, so I'd like to hold that off. So without anything further, the committee will adjourn. It is 5:40.
One more online.
Okay, and the person who's online will need to call back in as well. So thank you, and we're adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.